One of the best when it comes to breaking down college football, Stuart Mandel from The Athletic, kind enough to join us. Stuart, how are you?
Hey, Stuart.
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good. We're good. Obviously fascinated with the idea of this 80-team Super League college football proposal. You guys broke it down in The Athletic, but I do think it's important, and I think you've reiterated this on Twitter as well, that look, nothing really happens until the SEC and the Big Ten want it to happen. And do you anticipate that they do actually want this to happen?
Yeah, I think I can't emphasize enough, this is not an imminent possibility. This group of pro sports executives mixed with college presidents are, you know, putting this proposal together and putting it out there. And to this point, haven't gotten much traction, frankly, within, you know, amongst the power conferences, but certainly among the SEC and Big Ten. But they're kind of waving a red flag, and we have on-the-record quotes from presidents at West Virginia and Syracuse saying, guys, we aren't going to have a choice. We're facing, you know, we're going to have to pay the athletes. We're going to have to find a way to collectively bargain with them. We're being hit with lawsuit after lawsuit. Like, if we don't do something, the whole system's going to go bankrupt. And so if you're the SEC and Big Ten right now, like, you're the richest conferences. You got the greatest TV deals. You're not looking for help, right, from this group or, frankly, any external group. But what happens, I don't know, 5 years from now, if suddenly, like Alabama, Texas, they can write a check for whatever. But if you're Vanderbilt, if you're Mississippi State, are you going to be able to afford to add extra $15 million to your athletics budget to pay your football and revenue sport athletes or possibly all of your athletes? And what happens if some of these antitrust suits that are out there, the NCAA either loses them or they get settled, and suddenly these schools are on the hook for their share of a $1.6 billion settlement or whatever it may be. And that's where this group's coming in saying, well, we think we've got a solution.
Stuart, let's talk a little bit more in detail about this group, the College Sports Tomorrow, the CST, as it's been coined. Give us a little bit more info into the brain trust, the minds behind the CST. How deep does this go?
The ringleader is Len Perna, who is the founder of this search firm Turnkey. And he has actually, and I think this is ironic given that this concept would replace a lot of the conferences in college football, but his search firm is important enough to have led the searches that put Tony Petitti in his job, that put Charlie Baker, the NCAA president, in his job, and so on and so forth. And he's kind of it's been described to us that he's kind of running the ship, but he's enlisted all these various executives. I think it's significant for one that, and what really stood out to us, Brian Rolapp, Roger Goodell's top lieutenant, is involved in this. Now, they insist it's not the NFL itself involved, it's him personally, but hello, the NFL is meddling in some way in the structure of college football. That's a big deal. You know, I think they see, or he sees, that this system that has been their free farm system for all these years is in trouble, and it would behoove the NFL to help stabilize it. So you've got the business side of it. Let's be clear, like private equity, there's many private equity firms that are itching to get involved in college football like they have in some of the professional leagues. So there's some ties there. And then they do have a group of university presidents that are on it. I haven't quite figured out if they're all in, if all those university presidents are kind of all in on it, or if some of them are more advisory. But the two that we talked to were, I mean, Gordon Gee at West Virginia saying, we have to do this now. You know, you've got many of the people we talked to saying, this isn't even remotely realistic until you can get through this next set of TV contracts that the conferences have already locked in into the early 2030s. And he's saying, no, we can't wait that long, because if we don't do something, you know, like I said earlier, like there's a possibility that the conferences and the NCAA could become bankrupt. I don't know if that's just catastrophizing, going a little too far. But I know this, there's a lawsuit in Northern California, and the same judge who oversaw the O'Bannon lawsuit and the Alston lawsuit, now there's the House lawsuit. And the plaintiffs in that are former college athletes from the era when NIL was not legal yet, saying we lost out on millions and millions of dollars in NIL revenue because of your rules, and you owe us basically back pay. So there's a lot going on, obviously, in college sports right now. They're facing that challenge. They've got active lawsuits. They've got the Dartmouth team is unionized. They've got There are other lawsuits involving employment. And I think what stands out to me about this group, maybe this idea is completely far-fetched, but at least they're trying to do something. They've come up with a proposal, whether it's a feasible proposal, I don't know. Whereas most people in college sports for the last 3 years have been running around going, wild, wild west, this is the wild, wild west. We need guardrails. We need Congress. And nobody's actually offered a tangible, like, this is what we should do instead. And I think this, if nothing else, kickstarts that conversation.
So let's talk about the relegation element to this as well. Essentially saying that, okay, you know, your G5s out there, they could realistically work their way into that top 80. Am I reading that right? And essentially allowing, you know, maybe avoiding potential lawsuits from those schools saying you left us out of the party and saying, no, you have opportunities to be a part of this if you invest in your program and win some games. Is that a correct assessment there?
There's a lot of MLS and European soccer infused into this proposal for sure. And promotion relegation obviously is something we associate with European soccer. I've thrown around, not necessarily Super League, but the term Premier League for a long time, because it seemed like that's the way college football is headed. But most people, myself, would envision that being a lot more selective. Like, we're just going to take the top 28 brands and they're going to turn themselves into a league onto their own and ditch like the bottom half of the Power Five. Whereas this group is kind of trying to figure out a way to incorporate all of FBS. Obviously, if the goal is to maximize your TV revenue, you don't have a strong incentive to include San Jose State, Fresno State, et cetera. But they've at least, you know, created this like eighth division where those teams could play themselves into it or play themselves out of it. But there would at least be an avenue for them to be part of it and to be part of the playoff that would be part of this group. So I think that's more a egalitarian approach to it, whereas I think if the SEC and the Big Ten were to create their own vision of this, and we think they will, it would be a much smaller group of schools.
So, Stuart, in the delivery of this new grouping and this new business formation and what they're trying to plan to do with college football, how much interest has it generated from the ESPN and the Foxes and the sports providers of the world? How intrigued or interested, how much money, or is there any interest from them?
I would say there's, from the TV network side, there's not interest because it's not in their best interest. It's in their best interest to keep the conferences for the most part the way they are now, keep the contracts that they've already negotiated at a certain rate, rather than blow them up and replace them with something where they would have less leverage. The thinking that this group has is, you know, you're basically, it's the NFL model. The NFL, the entire TV rights for the NFL comes up once every 6 or 7 years, and that's your only chance to get part of the NFL TV rights. I've always been told by TV people that college football, and look, the Big Ten deal is worth over $1 billion a year, so it's not like they're going poor, but they're actually leaving a lot of dollars on the table because it's negotiated conference by conference instead of as one entity. So the group that's behind this would say, guys, we'll generate a lot more revenue if we all come together and we're one league, and that's, you know, ESPN, Fox, CBS, they have to negotiate, they have to bid on that. Obviously, ESPN, Fox, and CBS are saying, no, we're going to keep it the way it is, and we have a contract, and you guys are obligated to the contract. This group did not really give any sort of concrete explanation of how they would plan to unwind all of those television contracts. And so it may be that this isn't realistic until, like, the Big Ten deal, the Big 12, some of these deals start coming up, which would be around 2032.
Well, Stuart, we appreciate your time, man. Thanks for hanging out with us. Fascinating development. Personally, I hope it happens. I just want to see some kind of structure in some way, shape, or form and get us out of this old Wild West that we're all complaining about and actually put a system in place to try to fix it. But again, The Athletic, you guys are killing it as always. Appreciate your time, and let's do it again here soon.
Great write-up.
All right. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Stuart Mandel, right here on 97.5, the EKSL Sports Zone.